Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Henry.
Guantanamo is the best place to hold these hardened criminals.
But we don't... all these, you know, whining in sympathy for Roland Polanski.
Where's a Republican going to say this guy is wrong?
But I don't remember an outpouring of Democratic, obsessive.
I don't think it's going to be a tactic that's going to bring down a building or perhaps even an airplane.
It sounds racist to me.
Oh, it's big.
World famous Phil Henry Show from the El Pacifico every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. And this is a show where truth is our bitch. Whatever is happening, it's real. Whatever is happening, that is happening. That's what we like to, you know, that's what we like to talk about. All the other stuff, all that other crap that progressives and conservatives talk about, all that fantasy land, that fairyland jazz, man. As we like to say, this is the show where conservatives and progressives come to die. And I mean slow, and I mean painful, and they ain't smiling, man. Welcome back to the program, and our number is 877-876-PHIL. And we'll get to some phone calls this hour on Roman Polanski, 877-876-PHIL, and whatever else it is that people are talking about. And we're also going to have our stories that we couldn't get to. In case we didn't get to them, man, we'll get to them, you know, toward the end of the program. I want to start things this hour, though, with Michael Steele. He's the GOP leader. He is the chairman of the Republican National Committee. And this is the kind of chicken crap that I've been talking about on this program for God knows how long. And it goes something like this. If Obama's going to go to Europe to try to drum up some business with the International Olympic Committee to try to bring the Games to Chicago in 2016, why don't you give it a rest? Now, Michael Steele, you're a guy that I supported. When they first named you as the chairman, I thought, well, okay, this is different for the Republicans. He's black. Yes, he's black. And no, I don't want him to be the right kind of black guy like Obersturmfuhrer, who said that he was a self-hating black guy. I don't know how that jackass ever got away with a comment like that in the first place. Where do you get off, Four Eyes, talking about a guy being self-hating? He also wanted to soften the party in relation to some of these social issues where they had really gotten hard line and hard and, you know, just hard, man, if you'll pardon the expression. And there was no moving them off of some of these socially conservative issues that I believe and I will continue to believe have put them at odds with the rank and file of mainstream of the American people. Having said all of that, Michael Steele doesn't think it's a good idea for Mr. Obama to go to Copenhagen to make a pitch to the International Olympic Committee. The occasion was a telephone news conference that Steele was holding to offer an overall critique of Mr. Obama's health care proposal and his economic plan. Steele said the president should stay at home, but added that if it was okay with Michelle, or said it was okay for Michelle to go as his emissary. I think while it's a noble idea for the president to want to pitch his home city, Chi-Town, for the Olympics, and, of course, America would be more than honored to host the Olympics in the future. I think that at a time of war, I think at a time of recession, at a time where Americans have expressed rather significantly their concerns and frustrations over the course of the spring and summer about health care, about the economy, about a host of domestic issues, even international issues, I think this trip, while nice, is not necessary for the president. Now, these are criticisms that we've heard before. Where did we hear them? When Bush was out playing golf. And even when Bush said that he wasn't going to play golf. In other words, a guy can say he's going to play golf, he isn't going to play golf. He's going to go to Copenhagen, or maybe he's going to go and try to find some of that, whatever that crap is that one hick was talking about. What was that stuff, that flavored pinch?
Oh, yeah, that stuff.
What do you think of that?
It sounds racist to me.
Whatever. If they're going to take all of your fruit flavors out of your pinch or your snuff or your chaw or your chew, Jack, I guess you're just going to have to chew on something else, if you'll pardon the expression. Whatever it is he's going to do, the president of the United States, stay home, go overseas, play footsie, don't play footsie, drink a milkshake, don't drink a milkshake. There's always going to be one, just one, and that's all we need, one prominent person with the so-called pulpit, the soapbox, with the megaphone, the bullhorn, to say something really beside the point and illiterate like, I think he should be focusing on something else. Now, let me explain something to the chairman of the Republican Committee and to the Democrats and to the jackasses and to the jillasses and whoever else. The president's got a lot to do. Now, one of the things the guy said in the campaign, he's right, and George Bush would back this up. You got to know how to do a lot of things at once. This cat wants to go to Europe to try to get some business for Chicago. This is called money. Money! This is called going over and making a pitch to get a little business. 2016. I don't know what kind of shape we're going to be in then, but it might be nice to know that at least we got one moneymaker, the Olympics. Who knows where we're going to be at in 2016? Maybe some of these people are going to have their way. Maybe Detroit will shut down. Maybe they'll finally stop giving them money. The whole auto industry will go ahead and make it official and transfer over there to Tokyo. Maybe it'll become official and all the banks go belly up. Maybe we don't have two nickels to rub together, but at least we'll have something that's churning a little dollar. Maybe we got something that's going to be making us a beautiful dollar called the Olympics. Yeah, there's better things he might be focusing his attention on in terms of making dollars. But right now, this one happens to be one of the bigger ones, the Olympics. This kind of stuff, you talk about wasting time, man. Now, I'm telling you right now, Mr. Chairman, with all due respect, you got problems, man. You can't even count the problems you got with that party. Democrats, they got problems, too. You know, one of the problems the Democrats have got, I've never seen a party handed on a silver platter the support of the American people. You know, they talk about how Bush blew it after 9/11, how he had the support of the American people and he made all the wrong decisions. It isn't that the Democrats are necessarily making wrong decisions, but I have never seen a party squander the goodwill of the American people in such a magnificently laissez-faire fashion almost. It's as if they just show up and stand at a microphone, they think everybody's going to love their ass. And over the course of time, since January to today, they have managed to allow the Republicans, the conservatives, the brain dead to co-opt the debate on health care. And the whole thing is a government takeover bordering on Marxist-Leninism. That's how good you guys have done selling the health care plan. See? So you ain't got all your ducks in a row. Don't even worry about that. Now you come to the Republicans. They got a lot of power these days over what ain't going to happen. They've got a lot of people convinced that this, that, ain't no good, okay? When you ask them what the hell is better, they come up with their ideas, which are a joke. In other words, they don't have any ideas. What they're talking about is this notion of tort reform, which we blew out of the water last night. I mean, blew that to bits last night. See, what they're doing is they're playing games with people. They're playing games with the information, and they're playing games with the whole issue. They think it's funny. They think the whole thing's funny. If the Republicans bring up tort reform as a legitimate way to help reform costs, healthcare costs, and it's the only thing they bring up. In other words, they bring that up as, see, you guys aren't talking about this. We need to address this. All right. We'll address that, but what else have you got? Well, let's start with that. No, we ain't going to start with that. Don't treat people like they're stupid. If that's all you got, you ain't got nothing. But they don't care. They think it's funny. They think the whole discussion is hysterical. If it means that Obama winds up on his ass, they think the whole thing is a riot. Ha ha! We sold that tort reform thing, man. You reform tort all you want. You got a $2.5 trillion a year industry, and you're going to reform tort to the tune of what? $150, $200 billion? Maybe. At the outside, that's the number. And here's Michael Steele talking about whether Obama ought to be selling those cats over there in Copenhagen, the Olympic guys, the idea of having the Olympics in Chicago. Why not, man? It's money. It's money, huh? He ain't going over there and asking if he can, I don't know what, man, get an honorary doctorate from the damn Danish king, if he can wear a Viking hat. Maybe they can set him up in one of those lodges over there, give him a little something for his trouble, wrap him in a bear skin, lay him in a boat, you know, give him that Viking send-off. You think he's going over there having a party? The guy's over there doing some business. You know, it pisses me off. And this is true with Bush as well. See, this is again, it's got nothing to do with ideology, folks. What I'm trying to do here on this show is point out to you, wherever there is an American trying to get something done, I want you to know who it is. And I want you to know who the a-holes are that are trying to slow everything up because they've got a political ideology that they adhere to. And they wouldn't be the people that they're supposed to be if they didn't say something negative, even if it's about as stupid as the day is long. If the guy's going over there, if Bush were president of the United States, which he was for 8 years, 8 years, Obama should only be that lucky. And no matter what it was that man did, took about 2 days to go down to the ranch, and he's got Cindy Sheehan up his rear end, morning, noon, and night. Doesn't matter the guy's down there working. Doesn't matter that the guy's got a teleconferencing room with about 1,500 different monitors. He's got the whole cabinet down there. All he's doing is working his ass off. He happens to be working at a ranch as opposed to the White House. Well, that ain't going to slow anybody down. Let's not, like we say, let's not let the facts get in the way. Here is Michael Steele in a phone press conference. GOP Chairman Michael Steele. He doesn't think Obama's trip to secure the Olympics, a home in Chicago, is appropriate at this time.
I think at a time of war, I think at a time of recession, at a time where Americans have expressed rather significantly their concerns and frustrations over the course of the spring and summer about health care, about the economy, about a host of domestic issues, and even international issues, I think that this trip, while nice, is not necessary for the president.
All right, here is Robert Gibbs responding to that at today's press
it's
briefing.
It's important for him to talk directly with voting members of the IOC and make the strong case for the American side.
In response to IOC Chairman Steele's criticism about the president going to Copenhagen,
Who's he rooting for? Is he hoping to hop a plane to Brazil and catch the Olympics in Rio? Maybe it's Madrid.
Oh, yeah!
I think that's pretty gay.
All right, coming up, we've got more from you and me on Roman Polanski here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We also have the water contest at the radio station Gone Bad, Phase 2. The big boys are on the stand right now. That would be the suits, the radio suits. They're going to be grilling or drilling, depending upon your persuasion. And New York healthcare workers don't want the swine flu shot. Well, we'll see about that. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, where truth is our bitch.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, it's big.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and we're online at philhendryshow.com. You can go and look at I was going to say an undefeated video. What is that, undefeated? I'm thinking football, and I'm really not even thinking football. I know that the Colts just buried the Cardinals, but nonetheless, I had a lot of people getting upset with me for pointing that out. In any event, I'm sorry about that, Cardinal fans, but you know, you got Peyton Manning. It's just you regroup, baby. I was a Rams fan for a long time, and that's not St. Louis Rams, L.A. Rams. So I know what it's about to get your hopes up and then have your ass handed to you by some ball club coming into town after all that talk radio all during the week, all the sports talk. Oh, yeah, you know, we're ready, man. Last year was a stepping stone. This year we're busting through it, and the guy comes into town, man, and you're pulling your ass out of the turf. I don't think so. All right, now the Senate has rejected the public option. That is in the long-anticipated showdown. Liberal Democrats twice failed on Tuesday to inject the government-run insurance option into sweeping health care legislation taking shape in the Senate, despite bipartisan agreement that private insurers must change their ways. Mm-hmm. The two votes marked the victory for Montana Democrat Max Baucus, the Senate Finance Committee chairman, who is hoping to push his middle-of-the-road measure through the panel by week's end. And this middle-of-the-road measure would include something called health co-ops. What is a health insurance cooperative? You know what it is? Well, let me tell you. A health insurance cooperative is a member-owned nonprofit group similar to a rural electric cooperative that would provide its members with health insurance options. Cooperatives could be formed at a national, state, or local level and could include doctors, hospitals, and businesses as member owners. The details of the plan, that is the Baucus plan, have yet to be worked out, but broadly, it promises a system in which the government would offer seed money, some around $6 billion, to doctors, businesses, and hospitals to form the co-ops. Eventually, the co-ops would have to become self-supporting with premiums paid by members. A temporary government board would help set up the cooperative, which they have suggested might be a national entity with state-level affiliates. All right, so if you cannot afford insurance, then you join a cooperative that is member-owned. At what cost to you? We don't know. It depends on how many members you have. See? I guess it depends on how much money the government provides. Seed money, they're calling it. Now, why a cooperative as opposed to a national plan? Because the thinking is anything the government does is bad, you know. And cooperatives can be local, and that's got to be better. And it's member-owned. Well, all of those things are nice. They are managed and run by doctors, and they are managed and run by members. But it's going to cost you to join. And that's a far cry from finding a plan that's affordable to you or a national plan. You see, if you have a health insurance exchange and you have a great many health insurance companies competing for your dollar as the result of the mandate that won by health insurance, and you find a plan that you can afford through a health insurance exchange, you have a far, far greater variety of choices than you do looking for a co-op that's just starting up, that's got seed money from the government, that's got to find, you talk about trying to find doctors, you got to find doctors, hospitals, and members. Now, none of this is mandated by law. You can't mandate this by law because you don't know how much it's going to cost to join one of these co-ops. As opposed to if you can't afford insurance at all, you join a government plan where your health insurance, your health care costs, your health will be covered by the government. If you are so busted, so broke, so down on your ass, you can't afford to look at a health insurance policy, let alone sign one. You have this backup. But if you're telling people you can join a co-op because that's going to be cheaper, okay, which one? Well, they're going to form them. And in time, we'll see how that works. Well, what you're trying to tell me is that maybe I'll be able to afford it and maybe I won't. Oh, no. We're sure you'll be able to afford it, depending, of course, upon how many members there are. And as far as the quality of the care goes, well, but you know, private care is far better than anything publicly provided, right? No, I don't know that necessarily, because if you guys are talking to me about a co-op with doctors and members and member hospitals that's going to be formed by way of, well, some seed money and membership money, and all of that sounds great, man. That doesn't necessarily guarantee that I'm going to be getting some kind of kick-ass health care here. Well, it doesn't necessarily guarantee you're going to get kick-ass health care from the government. Yeah, but one thing's for sure, man, I ain't got to pay for it. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. We got Eric in Minnesota. Eric, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, Phil. Good evening. How are you?
Good evening. Fine. Thank you.
Good. It's a beautiful fall night up here in Minnesota, and I was just listening to your program. I've been listening to it for, I guess, a little over a year now. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
One thing I wanted to try to pick your brain about a little bit here, a little confusion on my end. I consider myself a conservative in terms of the political spectrum. And when I listen to your
program, what does that mean? What does that mean?
Well, that's the problem. Maybe I'm looking for a little assistance here in trying to define what that is myself.
Well, you know what being a conservative is, right?
Well, I consider it a conservative in the context of where we put conservatives and liberals now. Let me elaborate a little bit. When you look at our political spectrum, at least in the United States, one can look at right or left wing. The problem is if you cannot identify with anything or very few things in the modern Democratic Party, and you do not necessarily consider yourself to be a religious zealot or anything along those lines, where do you put yourself? In other words, if you are if you're fiscally conservative, if you believe that
you're fiscally conservative, what does that mean? Fiscally conservative? You mean if there's a guy dying of starvation on a sidewalk, you don't want to give him any money?
No, not at all. See, I believe that.
Well, what do you mean by fiscally conservative?
What I mean is, with respect to the government, how the government is, the federal government in particular, how that is constructed. If you go back and look at the
history, I don't have enough time. I'm running out of time here. I'm running out of time.
Okay,
give me a 10-second question. Give me a question in 10 seconds. I'll answer it. What's the question?
All right. What is wrong with being an ideologue?
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that, Eric. I told you to ask me a question. You did, and I'll answer that for you. Coming up, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. What's wrong with being an ideologue?
Phil Hendry.
Phil. Every night we're online with live streaming video on philhendryshow.com. You can watch the show, listen to the show, absorb the show, feel the show, smell the show. Good God Almighty.
Well, look at the ass on that.
Will you shut up? We just saw Lisa Marie Presley on TV. It was nothing.
She's wearing those yoga pants, man. I'm tired in hell.
Yeah, it really hard there. In fact, you could even see it.
All right, thank you. I don't need to know what you can see. Anyway, the question was asked by a caller just a moment ago from Minnesota, a nice guy. He said, Phil, what's wrong with being an ideologue? That was his question. What's wrong with being an ideologue? What's wrong with being somebody who has a political ideology? It doesn't work. That's the short answer. It doesn't work. It doesn't solve problems. It is always about pointing the finger at someone and saying, if you did what I told you to do, we'd be okay, but you didn't do what I asked you to do, so you're to blame. That's all that that's about. That's all that being a political ideologue is about. It's not about solving problems. Why? If you say you go through life with one set of tools to deal with every eventuality that may occur, well, that's not intelligent, is it? I can use even simpler analogies. I don't want to be childish about this, but I think it's pretty obvious. You have to have every tool at your disposal. There are times when, as we articulated the other night, public interest and private interest, there are times when private interest is failing and public interest or the public sector needs to step in and help. We've seen examples of this. There isn't a conservative ideologue anywhere that wouldn't agree with me that there were times when the government needed to act to prop up or otherwise reform or bolster or change the private sector because something was wrong there. It was failing. Does anybody doubt this? Does anybody doubt Roosevelt's antitrust initiatives? Not Franklin, Teddy. Does anyone doubt Abraham Lincoln's support for the American system, which was using public money to build canals, roads, bridges? We call it infrastructure today. Back in Lincoln's time, they called it American system. It was actually a Jackson era idea. I bet you there are conservatives listening to me right now. They wouldn't know Andrew Jackson from Michael Jackson. They don't know what the hell I'm talking about. What are you talking about, American system, public? But that's exactly what was going on in the early part of the 19th century. This isn't a new debate, folks. It didn't get invented with Franklin Roosevelt. It's been going on since the beginning of this country. We got to do something. What are you talking about? We got this place as a crap can. Take a look at it. Get from point A to point B. The whole place is a toilet bowl. Well, I don't know. Everything's a marsh, man. The roads are muddy. Ain't nobody doing anything. Well, what do you propose? I say we take some public money and we start building some roads. What do you think? And back then, guess what the argument was? Oh, yeah, constitutionality. Yep, that's what it was. There are those that would argue to this day that it was unconstitutional for the United States federal government acting in concert with the states to try to do something to upgrade the actual life condition of the people around here. I'm not talking about giving them welfare checks. I'm talking about building a road that they could take a horse down without it getting stuck in mud or whatever the hell those people, whatever problems they had with horses back then and getting from one place to the next. And is there anybody that would argue that at times public sector interferes with private? That at times when it isn't needed, when the government is simply not needed, that it actually impedes and slows down the growth of business? Nobody, no intelligent human being would argue against that. We've seen examples of this. We've seen examples where ridiculous and unneeded taxation, unneeded. Now, in the mind of an ideologue, though, it's always right. All those taxes were right. I voted for the right thing. We needed it. It was over the right. And you'll never have them say, Barney Frank is a great example of an ideologue. Fantastic example of an ideologue. On the other side, this guy, Stephen King, is an example of an ideologue. I'll bet you anything that Frank's bastard that we were talking about from Arizona, he's an ideologue. No matter what, no matter how, no matter when, no matter who, my ideas are sound. We've seen examples time and again where lessening government influence and interference in the business world has been a good thing. Private and public, there's a balancing act, and it's always going on. And if you're an ideologue and you always take the side against government, or you always take the side of less spending, less government, you always take the side of, you know, the government is always needed, always has to step in, there's always a problem, always something needs to be solved. When you always are either on one side or the other of that divide, you are not helping this country, you're killing this country. You're putting a railroad spike right through its throat. You're not helping the country. You're just being an ideologue. You're just being a prideful, vain person. You're inflexible, rooted in your self-righteous view of this whole world swirling and confused state around you. But by God, what you believe, and you're right. Everybody else is wrong. No room to change, no room to look at the facts as they exist, no room to say, maybe I ought to be able to, you know, adjust my thinking over here. It looks like something's changing over there. Maybe there's a different approach we can take. No, none of that. Just always this way until the whole country falls apart or is so choked with confusion and gridlock and anger and rancor, we're not getting anywhere. I'll give you an example, folks, the biggest example I could give you. Do you honestly think that by the time Obama's out of office, we will not have a national health plan of some kind? Because if you do, you're wrong. Even today as we speak, the American people are slowly but surely coming around to the idea that this is a very necessary thing. Now, what form it takes, I don't know. But there will be a national health care plan. And the reason why there will be is because the discussion was started soon enough. Even though we've had a lot to say about how they rolled this thing out, they couldn't have rolled it out more clumsily if they had, 10 thumbs. They rolled this thing out so stupid, but they rolled it out in the first year of this administration. This time next year, people are going to be a hell of a lot smarter. And this time 2 years from now, people will be even smarter still. People will learn, because there's nothing that I'm saying that isn't correct. They will learn that this is something that needs to be reformed, and very radically. It's going to save the country money. It's going to help this country over the next 100 years, over the next century. We got to get this country ready for a new century, and for kids that aren't even born yet, for Americans that aren't even born yet, we got to get the country ready for them to compete in this world as we traverse this new century. Ideologues, they don't care about any of that. All they say is, no, 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 no. And there'll be a time when the liberals and the progressives, they're always on my crap list. Don't worry about that, because they're just as stupid. They're just on the other side. The way they talk, the way they think, they're no different from conservatives. I think the two groups, if you guys could just get rid of your discussions of political philosophy for 5 seconds, I bet you guys agree on everything else, man. I bet you guys would just break bread. You'd have one hell of a great time because you're all just the same kind of people. just always right, never wrong, always sure, never unsure, and it's always somebody else's fault. You people make me sick, man. I mean, that's why we're doing this show. Something's gotta change somewhere. Somebody has got to say it. Conservatives, liberals, progressives, Democrats, Republicans. Enough to make you want to spew through your nose listening to these people. And they always wind up their little speeches with the same damn refrain. We'd have this done. We're not for my respected people on the other side. And they don't see how smart I am. They're stupid and I'm smart. Thank you.
Hey.
All right. The broadcast executive in charge of the radio station that put on the water drinking contest that killed a Sacramento woman testified in court today, that would be yesterday, that he never knew about the event until he got word several hours afterward that Jennifer Lee Strange had died. This poor woman was in a contest that was put on by a radio station in Sacramento called KDND, The End. Yeah, it sure is. 107.9, man. Entercom Sacramento Station. This is the Entercom company that runs this. Entercom Communications. Now, what did they do today? They put this guy up on the stand, this John Geary. He is the Entercom Sacramento Vice President and Market Manager. That means he manages all of Entercom's properties in Sacramento. And what did he say? Well, what do radio station managers say everywhere? I didn't know anything about it. I was, Plaintiff's lawyers in their questioning of Geary. Now, what happened was they had a contest. If you can drink enough water, if you drink so much water, you win something. And this woman drank so much water that she died. Now, they get this guy, John Geary, up on a stand. Okay. And they're talking to him about this. Now, this poor young lady, Jennifer Strange, she went home. She died of water intoxication on January 12, 2007, after finishing second in the contest. She finished second.
Yeah, they should have at least had her win posthumously.
Oh, well, that would have been great.
Are you an idiot, man? Oh, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, that's right. Sorry she died, but, we're going to give her the posthumous award. She can still go to the Super Bowl.
Well.
Come on, man. Think about it. Anyway, she went home and she died. Plaintiff's lawyers in their questioning of this guy Geary today sought to establish the Philadelphia-based Entercom Communication Corporation lacked the internal controls to prevent the dangerous contest from taking place. Yeah, they do. I got news for you. Of course they do. It's called not having anybody running things. It's got a brain. Entercom's lawyer, Entercom's lawyer, Carmela Massey, testified at a deposition played to the jury on Monday that the company had written policies that stated that contests which are illegal, dangerous, misleading, rigged, or in bad taste must be avoided. Now, that's very general. Illegal, dangerous, misleading, rigged, or in bad taste must be avoided. That's real general. Because you say illegal, it's not illegal. Is it dangerous? Drinking a lot of water? Not necessarily. Misleading? No. Rigged? No. Bad taste? Drinking water? How's it in bad taste? But that's not the point. This lawyer went on to say that she said it was her own policy that any contest that involved physicality or ingestion required the presence of an on-air medical professional. Here's a problem. That may be the lawyer's policy, but it's not the company's policy. And when they got this brain-dead John Geary up in the stand and they told him about it, he said he wasn't aware of any attorney's policy. He also testified that KDND's former promotion manager, who he fired, had expressed to him concerns about the morning rave on-air talent, which put on the water drinking contest. So what this guy did is what all of these guys do. They're going to blame the talent. He fired them all, which is what these jackasses do, because they don't know how to do anything else. And now he's going to say that he knew nothing about it. Yes, as a matter of fact, she did say something to me, but I had to fire all three of them anywhere, including... I believe it was the station. No, he fired the station manager. He fired the promotions director. He fired the disc jockeys and other station personnel as the result of this woman's death. So he fired a whole bunch of people thinking that was going to solve the problem. Big news for you, Jack Ball. They're going to get your ass on a stand again tomorrow, and you're going to have to answer a few more questions about just exactly what it is that you manage. He said he was not aware on the day of the water drinking contest that one of the DJs had asked on the air about 5:40, can't you get water poisoning and die? Geary said he also did not hear a woman's call into the show about 8:18 on that day to say that those people that are drinking all that water can get sick and possibly die of water intoxication. We're aware of that, another DJ replied on the air. So he wasn't this guy, Gary. And if you're wondering, what are you saying here, Phil? It's not the disc jockey's fault. I'm saying to you the following. These radio stations hire people to get ratings. They hire people to get listeners. They hire people to get audience. That way they get more advertisers. That way they make more money. And they tell them whatever it takes. That's what they tell them. And when they go out and they do their job to try to get those listeners that these people want and something goes wrong, they don't back them up. They don't say, you know what, we'll stand with you and talk about our thinking that went into this contest. The first thing today's modern broadcast executive does is he fires people. Now he's got a big problem because these people are not only suing, they're not just suing the company, they're suing the principals. They're suing some of the people involved. And my only question is this. I understand people being fired. I think it's probably called for in a lot of instances. How is it this guy still got a job? He's the market manager. It's not about him informing him of every contest. It's just, what's the policy? He doesn't even know what the policy is. He doesn't know his lawyer's got a policy that's different from the policy of the company. And what's his policy? And he doesn't know what's going on at every little radio station, doesn't know about promotions. What else do you do for a living, man? See, this guy's going to say, well, I go out and I sell airtime. Yeah, that's about all you're good for, too. You can't manage radio stations. Go out and sell some airtime then, boy. You're not allowed to manage a radio station or a group of radio stations because the only thing you're thinking about is how much airtime you're selling today and who you got to have lunch with. But what's going on the air, the only time you care about anything on the air is if it embarrasses you or has something to do with maybe the FCC going up your rear end on something, and then you just fire a bunch of people. You don't know what the facts are. You don't know what the law is. You don't know what the FCC guidelines are. You probably don't even know what the FCC is. You just fire, 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 fire. Well, good. Go back to your job selling airtime. But managing radio stations, you don't do. All right. That is that's chapter 16, you know, in how not to do things in the radio world.
That guy's never going to hire you.
Let's hope. We'll be back here in a week. Guy's never going to hire me.
You don't want to?
I don't give a. I don't know this guy, man. I wouldn't know this cat from, you know, from you. For all I know, you are John Gary in disguise with a plate in your head, or maybe he's got one. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, back with the stories we could get to after this.
Oh, it's big.
Phil Henry.
You're causing a disturbance.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Time now for the stories we didn't get to on our show tonight. A group of elite Swedish soldiers made a colossal error during a demolition exercise over the weekend when they blasted their way into the wrong house. That's an elite group of Swedish soldiers. The incident took place during what was supposed to be a routine training operation for a group of soldiers from Sweden's Life Regiment Hussars, an elite cavalry division involved in intelligence and paratrooper training. On its website, the Life Regiment Hussars characterize themselves as light, highly mobile units with substantial strike power. Among other credentials, the Hussars also boast of having long experience in the area of intelligence. Well, something nevertheless went wrong for the soldiers involved in an exercise which took place in northern Värmland, which is in west-central Sweden near the Norwegian border, according to news agencies. The mission performed in conjunction with the Swedish Honor Guard called for the soldiers to capture a house, okay? However, the elite unit somehow managed to hit the wrong target and instead bombarded a house located some 200 meters from their intended target. Collateral damage included blown out doors and window frames before the soldiers discovered their mistake. But it was your house, man. Anyway, I think we've already cleaned up after ourselves, but we have, of course, contacted the owner. There's no hard feelings between us, said the Hussars public relations officer, who also works for The End in Sacramento, which is a great station. All right. In other news, in Orlando, Florida, a motorist is accused of whacking a man with a golf club over the vehicles they were traveling in. After the vehicles they were traveling in were involved in an accident in DeBary, according to a newspaper. Joseph Sexton, age 30, is accused of hitting Jose Marrero, age 29, with a 9-iron Sunday and demanding to see the green card of a woman who was driving the vehicle Marrero was in, according to the Daytona Beach News Journal. Sexton was charged with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. Marrero was a passenger in a car driven by Grisella Marrero, who told deputies that a crash involving her vehicle and Sexton's sparked the fight, according to the paper. In other words, some redneck jackass got upset because the guy whose car he hit or hit him was a Mexican. Okay. A female pizza delivery worker got more than she bargained for on multiple occasions when she went to deliver food and was met at the door by a man wearing no pants. Portsmouth, New Hampshire Police Lieutenant Rodney McQuaid said the woman delivered the pizza notified police of the man's actions after it took place four different times. She would go to the address and the guy comes to the door wearing no pants. The lieutenant said the man would be completely naked from the waist down. That would be no pants. McQuaid said the pizza delivery woman called police in an effort to let them know what was going on but didn't wish to press charges. He said an officer was sent out to speak to the man and let him know how inappropriate his behavior was. We went and talked to the guy, and they weren't getting any more pizzas delivered there, that's for sure. Finally, in Wheaton, Illinois, authorities said a college student has been charged with breaking into the unlocked apartments of three women and rubbing their legs as they slept. Police said that when the women awoke, the man fled. Bond was set at $100,000 for the 19-year-old man, who was charged with three counts of criminal trespass. Well, he was breaking in and rubbing their legs.
What's wrong with that? Maybe they could use it.
It's sick, man. Don't be busted into people's houses. Our show is produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is Ralph Rodriguez. Till tomorrow at the El Pacifico, a very pleasant good morning.
Phil Hendry.